You are listening to No Justice with the John Howard Society of Saskatchewan. Conversations around justice and advocacy for those at risk of injustice. Canada's justice system is designed to judge people on their individual actions, but a basic understanding of criminal behavior will tell you that our individual actions are greatly influenced by more than just personal choice. We are products of our environments, of our socioeconomic status, and maybe most importantly, we are a product of our relationships. If you've never lived it before, it's hard to imagine what it must feel like to have someone you love on the inside. That person you know as your sweet, loving, and protective child is now locked behind bars. To simply write someone off as a criminal once they engage the justice system, it's to forget that these are people's sons and daughters. These are somebody's fathers and mothers. And so if it was you, what lengths would you go to in order to make sure that your loved ones knew that you care? When someone goes to prison, it's not only them that's impacted, but it's the families that they leave behind. In this episode of No Justice, brought to you by the John Howard Society of Saskatchewan, we are going to take an up-close and personal look at how our justice system and these challenging COVID-19 times has impacted one of the most basic, strong, and important relationships there is, the love between a mother and her child. It's Saturday, January 10th, and a group of advocates, made up of mostly mothers and family members, have gathered outside of the city on the side of a long road that leads out to the Regina Correctional Center. People wandered around as they waited for things to begin, trying to stay social distance while keeping warm in the bitter Saskatchewan cold. They were here to protest and support their sons inside. There had been a protest earlier in the week where the same group shared their deep concerns and they called for drastic action around prison conditions in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. A recent outbreak there saw 62 inmates and 12 staff test positive for COVID-19. Since November, each correctional institution in Saskatchewan has had some kind of an outbreak. It's hard to social distance in prison, and inmates don't always have the same access to care or opportunities to protect themselves on the inside that we do on the outside. And so the protest was calling for increased support and substantive action to stop the spread of COVID-19. While doing more to care for inmates and their mental health. Inmates and their families were scared and struggling, and so they decided that it was time to speak up. Today was a bit more of an upbeat spirit than the previous protest, as their goal today was simply to dance together in their jingle dresses and to encourage the men behind bars.
Okay, we'll just do us a sidestep.
That's Julie Paul you're hearing. Julie organized the two protests in support of her son, with lots of help from other people in the community who also wanted to support their family members in prison.
Just for the record, we're out here for them, so that they'll give them some hope for to get through the weekend, and that hope that they'll, the ones that have COVID, that they be able to heal and be able to get better quickly. Just knowing that we're out here, and just to get that unity spirit that we're all in this together, and then they're not forgotten about. So we're gonna do a little sidestep again, so that we could just get our feet warm. And this is for all the inmates in the jail right now. I know you can't see us, but hopefully one day you'll be able to watch this and to know that we were out here and we care for you, and we want you to get better, and we want you to also to get out and stay out of jail and just be like, just know that there's a better life. You don't have to be behind walls. You don't have to believe the lie that you're gonna not be able to get out of there, because you can, and you need to get out of there because it's a pandemic. So we need you out here.
Part of the reason that people felt happier today is because their earlier protest seemed to actually make an impact. Families were getting calls from their loved ones with news coming out of increased access to canteen and phone privileges. Before this, there had been reports of inmates being in complete lockdown with very little access to time outside their cells. with limited access to phones, masks, cleaning supplies, and basic hygiene routines. Tension and fear had been high. Correctional officers were doing their best to keep people safe, but they were getting sick too, and they were low on resources. The week before, news broke of a riot at Prince Albert Correctional that saw broken windows and smoke billowing from the facility. Saskatoon correctional inmates were in the midst of a hunger strike, and inmates in Regina were considering doing the same thing. So small progress, like access to the phones and food from the canteen, felt like a small win in the midst of lots of heavy news and concern.
I am from Ochapoise First Nation in Saskatchewan. Yeah, we were on the reserve, then we were living in Ontario. We kind of traveled a lot. I came to Regina when I was 12.
That's Julie. I wanted to learn more about her and her son to gain a better understanding of her protest and the impact that their interaction with the justice system had had on their family. I started out by asking her what life was like growing up, and she immediately pointed to both of her grandmas and the influence that they had in her life.
It was actually pretty good. I had a really good grandmother caretakers. My grandma raised me most of the time, and I had another grandma who taught me how to dance and was part of a dance group. So I think I stayed out of trouble because of that. When I lived with my grandma, there was my brothers, my older brothers, and then there was other family members. But then when I lived with my mom, there's just, you know, my brothers, my younger sister and brother.
Julie is a gifted artist and dancer. She does incredible work, and she's built her own business, Julie Paul Designs, creating powwow regalia and Indigenous clothing design.
I am definitely passionate about my art, my own business. Like I was talking about, I danced as a young person. I didn't really have the patience to bead, so I invented this thing called imitation beadwork. So now I use it to, created a business from it, and that's my passion right now, as well as sports, running, just being a grandma, and definitely helping other people.
Julia lights up when she talks about her family.
I have three sons. River is my oldest. He's 26. There's Keanu. He's turning 18. And Meek Sky, he's 16. We are very close, me and my sons. And that's why I would do this for any one of them. For River, he was my only child for 12 years. And we were very close. Even when he went to jail when he was 18, we actually became closer because we just talked on the phone literally every day. Had a super high bill, phone bill. We're very close. We like to make suppers together and watch movies, and they like to help with my art, whatever I need help with.
I wondered if her son shared her artistic talent.
My two oldest, but my youngest, my Zaswir's teacher, they found out about me and they're like, oh, that's your mom. They were doing an art project and they're like, oh, Miko, our Sky, this goes by, would be able to do this really well. He goes, oh no, you know how they say about the apple falling? She goes, I'm like so far when it comes to art. So
I asked Julie to tell me more about River, her oldest son, and the one who is currently in prison on remand.
Well, like I said, it was just me and him. He really loved art. He really, really loved to draw. He wanted to become a police officer. He loved soccer, football. He was a really athletic, really liked sports. He was the one that got the worst, though, of my parenting when I was younger. I wasn't a very stable, strong mom until he was 14, but I think it was a little bit too late. He'd already been a little bit damaged from that, so.
You can tell Julie carries the weight of being a young mother and the mistakes of her youth, and don't we all? My parenting motto has always been that it's not a question of if you'll mess up with your kids, but just in what ways it will happen, and whether you're willing to admit it and try to do better the next time. Every parent lives with these regrets, and it's clear that Julie loves her kids deeply and takes good care of them.
Yeah, but, you know, like he knows now, he's always said to me how much, you know, he just appreciates that my life changed. He wanted to become a police officer for a long time, until he started getting abused and getting racial profiled and kind of probably turned him off. He just, you know, the self-esteem of being in jail and being labeled. Now he's talking about using art because I'm a designer. Like he wants to design his own clothing line, you know, like logos and stuff. I don't know. We had such a strong bond. His dad not being around was a major thing, but he's learning to forgive, you know, that because he wants to become a good dad now, so. He's on remand, so he has a court date of January 14th. He should be able to get bail. I'm really hoping he gets bail, so.
River was arrested and put in prison on November 19th. November is when COVID-19 really started to take off in Saskatchewan. It was in early November that we hit our first day of three-digit number cases, and it kept on escalating from there. Beginning in late November and building steam through December, Saskatoon Correctional and Saskatchewan Penitentiary in Prince Albert both had outbreaks, resulting in more than 130 cases of inmates and staff with COVID-19. We had been sounding the alarm on COVID-19 in the prison since the beginning of the pandemic, but this was the first time we had seen it start to grow and have a significant impact. So River went into prison at precisely the time where things started to get really bad.
I actually knew that he was on warrant. I've always been the mom to tell him to face the music. Looking at it now, I would have hit him. I would have kept him freaking. I honestly, like the fear I go through right now, this whole past week has been hell. I honestly don't know what I was thinking to tell, you know, like, go face that music, you know. I've always been like that for him. I've even convinced him to turn himself in 2 times. You know, I've had to call the, what is it called when he was younger, the probation to get him, you know, picked up. So I've never been the mom that, oh my God, just don't bother my son. I've never been like that. So he's always known that. But now looking at it with the pandemic, I know that's a law, but I wish I had thought about it more, because right now it's a life and death thing right now. He doesn't deserve, nobody deserves to be in there. Oh man, it's like hell in there. He's been in jail before, but this is a whole total new hell, because it's like you're put in a cage with a dragon or a lion, and that being COVID, you know, because you don't have nowhere to escape.
River ended up testing positive for COVID-19. I asked her to tell us how it felt after all the worry and concern that she'd had for her son when she finally got the call confirming that he had tested positive.
I was looking at my phone and it said December 27th, which was a Sunday when I last talked to him, and I didn't hear from him for a whole week. I didn't get a chance to ask him the actual date, but it was probably December 28th because he usually calls, and they were doing testing that week. So, and then he got confined to a unit.
I wondered how River was holding up through all of this, both emotionally and physically.
Just scared that he can't contact to tell me updates, or just scared that he can't get the proper care. Can't smell, can't taste, his throat. When I was talking to him at first time, I couldn't hear him. I was like, what? And I had to like put my ear to the phone and I'm like, what? He couldn't totally talk. His voice was very raspy and I just had to stay quiet, and then he would talk. He goes, oh, probably because I didn't talk for all those days. And I was just like, oh my God. He didn't realize how bad his voice was because he wasn't even talking. He was so depressed in there. I don't know. I was just very emotional. I wanted to scream, but I had to like stay calm for him, because I knew it was only minutes that we had to talk. I had to get out all the information I could. I had to figure out what to do. I had to like figure out how he was feeling, because he wanted to stay strong. I know he didn't want me to panic. And I told him, I said, you better ask for Tylenol, because he's used to that treatment. His rationale is not to ask for anything, because getting turned down is even worse than being turned down completely. Because when they just tell you no, that's just the worst. It's the human degradation to the greatest degree. That so he just didn't talk.
I asked Julie what the straw was that broke the camel's back for her and caused her to take that step to protest and to try to support her son this way.
Well, I told him a couple of weeks ago that I would if he was in danger, if I found out that he wasn't being treated right. I phoned there and I asked my son, because I haven't heard him from for a week. I asked if he has COVID, and they said, oh yeah, well, we would call you if he had COVID for sure. And I'm like, okay. So it made me feel better. And I was like, okay, I felt better, you know. And then I wake up, he calls me and he tells me he has COVID. And I was just like, what? I felt so mad. And then to find out that he didn't have anything to help himself get better, which he's only had a blanket and a book in there. And he was hungry, and he was, his voice, how he was talking to me. When I was telling you that when I was talking to him, I couldn't hear him, is because he said he didn't talk all that time in there. And then he didn't realize his voice was that harsh sounding.
There's so much stigma around inmates and being in prison. And I think when you're not too close to the issue, quite often what you'll hear people say is, well, if they wanted better treatment, then they shouldn't have committed the crime. And so I think what's so valuable about Julie sharing her story and sharing about her son is that it really just shows you the humanity inherent in these situations. This is her son. This is the person that she loves. And what would you do if it was your child, if it was your loved one?
I told him, son, I said, I'm going to do what I told you what I was going to do. This is not going to happen. Okay, I was crying and crying and crying. And I tried to sleep and my body was aching. My head was aching. And then I'd cry, and then I fell asleep for an hour, and then I'd wake up and I'd just have an image of him. And I didn't even know he had COVID at that time. I actually didn't know, but I knew something was wrong because he wasn't calling me, and I'd put my money on his account. And just not knowing, it was that, and then getting up and then finding out that he had that. It's just like I had a strength. I think the tears literally gave me strength. The pain came out of my body. Literally, I felt like the pain left where it gave me strength to know I had to do this. I had to do what I said I was going to do because I was just like, I've never done anything like that before in my life. And I was so surprised that it was not easy, but it was just fluid. Like it just happened in progression. And it just gave me that momentum when things were working out and working out and working out. Even when I had a good sleep, that actually helped because I didn't sleep at all. But the night before the protest, I actually had a really good sleep. When you have a good sleep, you're ready to go. I put out a call and I just said, if there's any moms, I made a group. People started just adding, messaging me. It's just saying my son is in there. And I just made a Facebook group. And I think I attribute it to my business because I have a lot of followers as it is. So making a post just was, it happened fast where people started messaging me. Yeah.
As mentioned throughout, this group was primarily a group of moms. And so I wondered how exactly that impacted Julie in letting her know that she wasn't alone in all this.
Absolutely amazing. Honestly, like it made the suffering less harsh to go through. Even right now, people messaging me and telling me like their story. Honestly, it's so true when you're going through a similar situation with other people, it makes it less burdensome.
I asked Julie what her main goal was through all of this. What was she trying to accomplish?
I would like them to receive a greater protection in there, getting the extra food supplements, because if they're going to have to maybe eventually get it, the COVID, it would be so better if they were strong, their health is strong. So if they had that extra food, vitamins, it would be able to keep them, their immune system stronger. That's pretty much what I'm hoping for. That's what we have when we're out here. We have access to our food and to our hot drinks. That's what I'm hoping for all of them to have that, because they're sitting there like sitting ducks. And they don't have any protection, and they got their canteen back on some of the units, but not all of them. And I don't even think they should have to pay for that extra. Actually, I really do have a strong hope, because just like you were talking about in the beginning, I thought about that, like how the prison's going to get affected. I thought about them because of my son, and I wondered how they would handle things and how they would keep them safe. But it was just a passing, thought, and because I'm so like thinking about also like you do got to like do your time. But I just never thought it would get out of control like this. I just thought they would have it under control. I do just pray that they will have some measures in place now. Try something different than locking them down.
I asked Julie if she wanted to share anything on behalf of her and River. If she had one message that she wanted to share with people that were listening, what would it be?
He said to keep praying because that is helping them. They have no one even caring about them, but when they heard that people were praying about them, it literally gave them strength in their body, like almost like a miracle, where they started to have no symptoms, where they felt like a normal, like they're normal in their body. So that's my message from him. But my own is just to not let this die down so that something can happen at the government level, at the correctional level, and even at that grassroots level, because it has to be like a wildfire where a lot of people today, even on my Facebook, there's even more. I've shared it to the groups that have like 200,000 First Nations people. So it's going to get stronger. And that's because they deserve our efforts as we would if we were in their position. Like I was thinking about myself, if I was in there and I couldn't get access to talk to my own baby or my own mom to tell them I'm starving, I can't breathe, I'm so scared for my life. I would want somebody to fight for me, to do whatever they could to help me. So, and if I knew that they were doing that, I would actually have strength not to give up.
Say hello.
Hi.
Say, I'm Malachi, Rashawn's brothers.
This is Stella Cote, and as you heard, Malachi, her youngest son, a sweet little boy with the most contagious smile. Her oldest son, Rashawn, is currently in remand at Regina Correctional Center.
Yeah, I'm on the phone. Okay, go over there. Go on. Go
ahead. Stella's got a busy household, as you can hear, filled with laughter and crying and all that fun stuff that comes with young children.
I have four kids and a granddaughter. I have my son, Rashawn, which he's in the Regina Correctional Center sitting on remand right now. He has a daughter, my granddaughter. She's going to be 2 in March. And I got twins. So when Rashawn was 15, I had my twins. So there's a 15-year gap. Got pregnant with my twins. So I have a boy and a girl, Trinity and Trevor, Cody. And then I had my baby after the twins, so Malachi. I'm from Cody First Nation, but I grew up on the Musquepeding First Nation with my grandmother, Mavis, my dad's mother. I moved to Regina about 2.5 years ago. I lived in Qu'Appelle, a little town called Qu'Appelle, just outside of Regina. I lived there for about 2 years, and since I've been living there, I worked at a private care home in Standing Buffalo, Dakota Nation, down in Fort Qu'Appelle. I've been there, working there since I was 19, on and off. I never had really had any other job. I worked there with my mom, Mavis. And I decided one day that, you know, I wanted to further my education. So I applied for mental health and wellness at SIIT in Regina here. I got in, right? So I moved to the city. I finished my mental health and wellness program. I started just this fall going to university, taking 4 classes for my Bachelor of Science.
I wanted to know what life was like for her growing up.
What was it like? Actually, I loved it out there. You know, it's so beautiful out there, the valley, everything. Growing up with my Keepness family out there, they have a ranch out there and everything, right? So my dad was pretty much in living with them down in the Keepness core, I should say, in the valley. But I lived up on top of the hill, on top of the valley with my grandmother, Mavis. We had a house up there. So I really enjoyed growing up in Musquepeding. I grew up with my grandmother. She raised me good. She taught me how to work. She taught me, you know, like to be a hard worker and not to depend on really anybody, because she was the only one that actually raised, there was me, my cousins, and my son pretty much, eh? So she raised all of us.
Stella is passionate about her Indigenous heritage and continually wants to learn more about her culture.
I don't know, I'm really compassionate about my culture. I want to get to learn more about my culture. Like, I know it's like all the ceremonies, the sweats, everything that comes with it, right? I just like my learning about my culture. I like people. My passion is helping people, trying to give good advice, you know, trying to help people as much as I can. That's why I took mental health and wellness program, to get to know myself better as a person, and to get to know my culture better. Also, along with that, is to help people along the way as my journey goes on. I plan on furthering my education through university, First Nations University, so the future.
You can see her swell up with pride and joy when I asked her to tell me more about Rashawn. She's so proud of him, and you can just see it shining through in the way that she describes everything that he does and everything that he is.
Yeah, he was like, very smart, very protective, very kind, very gentle boy, you know. Growing up, he just had this big, kind heart. He is very smart, good at school. He went to Belgoni Elementary. He's been in there since he was in grade 1 to like grade 6. One of his best subjects, I remember him coming home one day and he brought home a test and he got like a 98 on it, eh? And I was like, well, what's this 98? I was like, what did he get a 98 on? And he's like, he showed me, and it was a French test. He was really good at his French, right? And me and my sister were just kind of giggling, and we're like, oh, he'll be speaking wicked deadly French by the time he's 18 years old. We won't even sing, eh? And we're just laughing. Right on, good. So you're very smart. See, if you can learn French, you can learn everything else, I told him. Like, he's real good. Back in 2011, when he was 11 years old, he played Ticats Regina football here. So we had him in football for a year, and he loved it. He was really good at it, and he loved playing football. We love doing all that stuff, but sadly we couldn't keep him in there because we had really no money, no fun for him, no, you know. And oh, he was such a good horseback rider. He would go to Cameos, he'd saddle up a horse, Cameo would let him saddle up a horse, the boys, and they would ride all over the reason. That was his passion, was riding horses. His passion was quadding. My mom bought him a quad, and that's all he did all day. He would quad around all over the valley, all over those hills. Mom spoiled the boys so much. She did everything with my, like, the kids, eh? She was like a super grandma. When he was growing up, he wanted to become a professional footballer. Tell me, Mom, once I make it, I'll buy you a house, and I'll buy you that. And like,
she then proceeded to share some of the challenges that Rashawn faced growing up, still maintaining that same sense of pride and joy that she had in her son.
But he did have some challenges growing up, which was ADHD, right? That's a whole nother different, like, dealing with, eh? Like, because he'd have his little outbursts, but that was just from his ADHD as growing up as a child. School, it was kind of hard for him to sit down and, you know, like, try and learn and stuff like that. So that's what was kind of in his challenges in his life, being the only, like, almost the only Native kids going to school there. So having an environment like that, you know, it would be kind of hard to, like, try and fit in. And so that's why, like, he kind of strayed off as he got older up into his teens. His ADHD kind of got in the way where he couldn't concentrate. He started getting into, like, being into different groups, getting into different people. When he went to go and visit his dad, that's where it all kind of started, you know, on his dad's side. From there, he just kind of got into the wrong crowds, and he started taking off from school and, like, doing stuff like that to get himself into trouble at a very young age. And he's, like, really sad that, you know, my son had to experience that and go into that. You know, I feel for him, and I'm always going to be here for him no matter what. I'm his mother. I'll always love him. No matter how much mistakes he makes, I'll never shun him out. That's one thing you never do to a child is shun them out. You always got to love whatever they come, however they come. You love them no matter what, because that's the way that you show affection. You love them and you care for them. That's the only way that you'll actually help them get out of that situation that they're in, because that's what they need, is they need love. They need to be heard. They need to be knowing that people care. They need to know that they're loved and they're not forgotten. These are our next generation we're talking about here. We need to love them. We need to direct them into a way, you know, that'll upbring them where they can find their identity. Right now they're lost. And it's not only my son. There's a lot of young sons out there that are the same position as my son. And I just love my son so much, you know, and he's very kind-hearted, and people got to learn how to sit down and actually take the time to get to know a person before you actually go and try and stereotype somebody just because of their action doesn't mean to find them personally, you know what I mean? Sometimes people get into the wrong situations at the wrong time. So for me, I'm trying to set a perfect example now. I wasn't perfect. I was young. Wanted to hang out with my friends and everything. And, you know, I kind of put him through that too, you know. And it was a cycle. You know, it's a cycle. Sat him down and I told him that, you know, son, I'm sorry. I said, I'm sorry for what I have put you through. I said, but now that I have knowledge and understanding, I said, I want to try and make things right. And I want to try and have a good life now. I said, not only for you, but for my granddaughter and for brothers and sisters, I said. And that's why now today I'm trying to show and follow a good example, because our grandmother raised us right. That's what I told him.
As Stella gets a little more personal with her sharing, you can hear the intensity in her voice. You can also hear it in her hand movements as she emphasizes her points with passion and heart, hitting her hands together. You can tell that she's really taking this seriously and wants people to understand.
You running around on the streets like this, I said, Grandma didn't raise us like this. You know that, I said. Grandma raised us to be hardworking, always working and doing right. She made sure that she had food and clothing on her back, and she always made sure that we did things right and made sure, like, she always talked to us. She never let anything go. And I always told him that, you gotta get your education. I said, Grandma would be so proud of you, you know, like, she's still, but, like, I always try and talk to him and, you know, put some. You can't be doing this, Rashawn. You can't be doing this.
Rashawn went into remand on November 29th, just as the outbreak started happening in correctional centers across Saskatchewan.
I cry. It really hurts me because I don't want him to be stuck in a little tiny box all day long, looking at walls, nothing to do. Like, that's really, like, messing with their mental health, eh? They need to have access to counseling, to traditional healers, to sweats, to, you know, ceremonies, whatever it is that helps them get by in the day. They need that to survive, or else they're all going to go insanity. Like, that's just insane what they're doing to them. That's so inhumane, you know?
There's not a lot of programs available to people on remand. Saskatchewan uses remand at almost twice the national average. The most recent stats show that 58% of the prison population in Saskatchewan is there on remand, meaning they haven't officially been convicted of a crime yet. Most programs in prison are only available to those who are sentenced because of their longer-term stays, so this leaves 58% of the prison population without access to extra supports, programming, and education.
Before we did the protest, it was like lockdown all the time, he said. Can't even get out, Mom. We only get out for half an hour and that's it. They took away the microwave. They took away mostly their canteen. They only got a few canteen. They took away their courtyard. It's just like terrible. It just, they have to come up with a plan, you know, where they can get in people that could help for their mental health. They need more programs in there. They need more of that. They need more counseling in there. All, anything that they can. Life skills. Majority of these guys don't even know how to handle life, you know? Even like when I put money on his calls, I still have to pay them like $5 just to put it on their call. It's like $5 extra plus my money on top of that, so I'm actually paying them to give them calls.
We'll do another episode down the road on the challenges of the prison phone system. I asked Stella how LaShawn was doing in prison. How was he holding up?
He's scared that, like, the guards are going to go on to that side and come and bring it to the other side, because sometimes he said the guards don't even wear masks. They don't even come in with gloves or masks, he said. They just come in and out of here like it's nothing. One, my son phoned me because he didn't call me for like 4 or 5 days, and I was worried. Okay? I was like, okay, my son's not calling me. Maybe he doesn't have money on his phone. I was like, how come he didn't call me? He's like, oh, we've been locked up for 5 days. These guys, the guards didn't want to let these guys out, meaning probably some other guys on a range, right? Didn't want to let these guys out, so they smashed out the windows from their cells and they were trying to light things on fire. He said they were trying to have a riot. I was like, holy cow, this is getting worse.
Just the week before, inmates at Prince Albert Correctional Center reached a boiling point, smashing windows and starting a fire.
Police are on scene for a disturbance at the Prince Albert Correctional Center. Standing here outside the facility, I could hear inmates yelling and what appeared to be smashing windows. Smoke was billowing.
One inmate held a sheet out the window that had writing on it. It said, "Help. They are treating us like animals in here." The official line from the province was that the riots were gang-related, but inmates claimed it was due to COVID-19 and how they were being treated. We'll let you come to your own conclusions, but what's clear is that the situation was a tinderbox, just waiting for someone to strike a match.
The ministry says there are 14 inmates at the facility who have tested positive for COVID-19. Police are blocking off the area around the main gate.
Anything else? I said, and they're only letting me out for half an hour, and I'm barely getting let out. He's only getting let out half an hour. They're starting riots. The guards are holding them in their cells, not letting them shower, not letting them have their personal hygiene. Stuff like that, not letting them have the microwave, not, you know, they took the TV out, everything. They just stripped them down of everything.
Stella didn't know Julie before all this happened. They both made posts online, worried about the pandemic and how their sons were doing. And through the magic of social media, they found each other.
I was really like a supportive of her, what she wanted to do. I was backing her up because my son's in there too. What greater love is that for us mothers to come together for our children? And that's the way our native people, our native culture is, you know, we got to be there all the time. That's our future gatekeepers, they say. It was really good, really powerful, like, for us mothers to come together and do that, not only for us, but for other families as well that are, you know, suffering, that have a loved one that are suffering with COVID and treated with systematic discrimination. Just because they're native doesn't give anybody a right to go and treat them the way that they're being treated in there. Even the Humane Society treats their animals way better. than they do in these correctionals in here. They get fed more in the humane than they actually feed people in the correctional here. That's very inhumane. I don't like it. Even though they do bad or whatever it is that they got themselves in there, they're still human beings. They are still souls in a human body. Those are still souls. They still feel, they still bleed, they still hurt like us. I pray, I ask him that he'll work in this justice system with this federal government, with this Christine Pelt, to soften her heart, to put compassion in her heart, to put compassion in Scott Moe's heart. He's lucky he didn't experience that in jail. He's lucky he didn't go in there and spend 5 years in there. Maybe if he did, maybe he would have had a change of mind. Maybe he would have had a change of heart of how they live in there. Maybe he would have seen. He would have got a taste of that. But right now, it's just his political try and make themselves look good and mighty. That's not good. At least give them some access, some more access to, like, you know, their mental health. They need their culture practices in there. They need more programming for them to succeed well before them getting out of there, you know? Like, they say if somebody's in there for 2 years or a year, they should be giving them programs, life skills, all those kind of stuff before they can actually get out. Anger management, all those kind of counseling skills, whatever, builds them up to become a better person. Love your children. Love your children no matter what they do. Don't shun them out. Just keep on loving them no matter what they bring to the table or no matter what they do. You keep loving them no matter what. No matter if they get into trouble. No matter if they have addictions. No matter anything. You always have got to love your children and show them that you love them because they are our next generation. We got to come together for our next generation, our children. These are the ones that are going to carry on after us. We need to show compassion. We need to show them that they're not forgotten, that they're loved. This is where it has to stop now. We need to stand up for our children. They're still human. They still feel like us and they still need to be loved no matter what. You just gotta show it, man. And you gotta show them love, that's all. That's all they need.
I want to finish off today's episode with a poem. After the first protest, I was looking around in the Justice for Inmates at Regina Correctional Center Facebook group, and I saw this poem posted by Knight Canestino. Knight is Julie's sister. She based this poem on a picture she saw of her sister standing in the field looking longingly towards the jail after the protest. It's a beautiful poem that sums up the love that this mother has for her child and the change that needs to happen.
A mother stands looking at the windows in the distance. Across that field, behind a fence, her son sits in jail. A mother yearns to hug the child who grew up too soon. In her mind, she sees him crying behind those walls. A little boy, the one she cradled in her arms. He's all grown up, facing our world pandemic in a jail cell, like so many other men, wondering why they aren't even worthy of Tylenol when they're in pain and suffering with COVID symptoms in a cold room. Those concrete walls hide ghosts, old men who might leave in body bags, while young men make war calls unheard by prison guards who hush them when they beg for hot water for tea. COVID doesn't care who it infects, much like our government who doesn't care to protect the men who made grave mistakes, who pray for a second chance to see their loved ones, who stand outside these windows, praying for change and a single phone call.
I want to thank Julie Paul and Stella Cote for sharing their stories today. I also want to thank their sons, River and Rashawn, and I want to wish them well as they wait in remand, and I hope that they can get out soon and figure out what the next step in their lives are. I also want to thank Knight Canestino for her beautiful poem. That was wonderful. It was a great way to finish off the episode. And of course, thanks to my big boss man, Sean Fraser, our CEO at John Howard Society of Saskatchewan, for his input and helping with editing. We want to encourage you as we close today to connect with us on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. We love engaging on there. We like to share about these issues on there as well. And we're more than happy to have conversations there. So please like, follow, all that fun stuff, and join us on there. We'll add all the links in our episode notes so that you know where you can connect with us. If you have any suggestions, feedback, topic ideas, guest ideas, people that we should have on the show, don't ever hesitate to reach out. You can connect with us on any of our social media platforms and send a message. If you're interested in learning more about John Howard Society and what we do, you can visit us at our website, sk.johnhoward.ca. We have a programs page where it talks about our various justice and social programs, and it goes through in detail sort of what we do and what we're all about. There's also educational resources, and you know, I'll throw a little plug for our donate page. We do incredible work in the community, and we are always looking for any support that you're willing to give. Please check it out, sk.johnhoward.ca. If you're willing, please subscribe and rate the podcast on whichever platform you listen on. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, all of the above and more. So please make sure you rate and subscribe on whichever platform you listen on. We're going to be back in a little bit with another episode. If you're enjoying this content and you want to hear more, just follow us on our social media and we'll keep you in tune with what's going to come next. So thanks for joining us, and we will talk with you later. Have a great day.